us, then we'll do whatever necessary for them.
Thank you. Thank you.
the fact that some of these things we are saying we will achieve are cumulative. We are not saying them on their own help us achieve, but we are saying them in combination with other areas of work assist us to achieve a certain strategic goal, but not in 1 year, over a period of time as well. So I think we just need to articulate that much more clearly. In terms of the question that was raised by Honorable Machoba, I think it's around the permanency of the leadership of the council. It is Minister's intention, as soon as Parliament is finished with the last bit of the ICASA councillors, to finalize that process. And that is why we are saying by January 2018, we are hoping that that process will be completed. Chairperson, if you allow me, then I'll hand over to ICASA to answer the rest of the question.
No, it's okay. Traffic in Cape Town is cut from 12 o'clock if heavy traffic. I just hope FPP flights are later than 5. When that time comes, and you can sneak out. Thank you very much. Who's going to take over? Chairperson?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members of the committee. I'd like, as you realize, the musical chairs have started on that end and coming this way, and shows areas of priorities and responsibility. Definitely, the questions that were asked all around are genuine and legitimate and need addressing in an appropriate manner. I think we've learned a lot out of being made aware of our blind side. And on that basis, there's really something that we ought to pay particular attention to. Inasmuch as we do have people who are day-to-day responsible for the activities in a manner in which the questions were asked, I would like to emphasize the point that in the final analysis, the council is accountable to the primary stakeholders, both the DOC and the portfolio committee. With that in mind, I would like to hand over. I will just do the quarterbacking where necessary, but defer to my fellow colleagues on responses to the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. And thank you, Acting DG, for the responses. I will not deal with the questions that the Acting DG has already touched on. Chair, in the order that you requested that we perhaps deal with Honourable Kongubela's questions first, I will start with those and then go back to the sequence. There were about 4 or 5 questions that Honourable Kongubela raised. The first was around arrangement of information. There was also a question around the 3-year comparison of our performance as assessed by the AG. There was a question that he also raised around the strategic outcome-orientated goals and how we have outlined the targets, the use of percentages with the examples in corporate services, finance, and HR. And I think at the end he then raised the question around basic issues that we keep falling flat on as per the AG. In terms of the arrangement of the information, Chair, I think we accept the comment. The way we approached the presentation was simply to highlight what we thought were key achievements and key areas of non-achievements. And we took that approach based on the premise that the presentation accompanies the annual report. So in respect of the areas where in the presentation we highlighted, we set out 5 targets, but we only highlighted three key achievements and said nothing about the non-achievement. And I'll use corporate services as an example. The annual report has the table with all the targets. On corporate services, we highlighted what we thought were key achievements in the presentation. When we go to the non-achievement, there was nothing because, again, in respect of corporate services, there was 100% achievement. But I take the point that we could have strongly aligned the presentation with the full details in the annual report, and we'll take that learning going forward, Chair. On the three-year comparison around the performance information and then increasing the number of issues that the AG has found, I think the comment was we appear to be regressing in terms of our performance. And there was also a statement that in an unqualified audit environment, there's room to do a lot of wrong things. I think, Chair, the key point to note with regard to the performance information is that for the medium-term period, we are seriously constrained in terms of fixing the strategic plan. The advice that we have received from the performance information specialist is that it's not advisable to change certain soups or to change the soups and to change certain targets within that period. So the committee will note that in the last year, the AG would raise certain aspect of the performance information, and in the following year we would still have a finding on the performance information. Those findings are not necessarily consistent. So we may have had a finding relating to the reliability of information in 15-16, which we, as much as possible, try to address as we formulate the new annual performance plan. But we then find that some findings then come out in respect of the performance information, but this time relating to a different area, not necessarily to the same previous findings. So that some of these findings are not repeat, but I would say, Chair, that as we look forward to the start of a new medium-term period, we'll hopefully have an opportunity to overhaul the plan and fix all the deficiencies so that we start the new period properly. The number of issues, Chair, in terms of the increase in the number of issues, I think it's important for the committee to note that some of the issues that have now been raised by the AG in the 2016-17 financial years relate to the previous years. And I think the CFO would outline those areas. So in the 15-16 financial year, as an example, we may have had three or four findings. But when the AG comes in 16-17 and the auditors for 16-17, in the process of engagement, they then pick up other things that happened in the previous years that they may not have picked up, which they then get us to disclose in the current financial year. So the schedule or the notes to the financial statements have two categories. There's findings for the current year, and there's other things that are now being raised which relate to prior years, which we then need to correct. So strictly speaking, as much as it appears that we are regressing, that ought to be contextualized with the fact that it's not things that we did now. It's other things that happened in the years prior that were not picked up. Chair, I think I just want to comment on that issues of outcomes. And I think I've already touched on it, and the acting DG has dealt with it as well, to say, from an ICASA perspective, if we were to take universal access to broadband as a strategic outcome-oriented goal, Honorable Kungubela is very right to say all we can do is create conditions. So if we were to license the spectrum, we then hope that the people who are licensed, obviously with imposition of obligations where relevant, will then deploy the broadband such that 100% is then achieved. And perhaps as we start the new cycle of the MTEF, we need to think carefully about how we phrase the goals and make it clear that we set the goals with a frame of reference of what it is that falls within our power of control. And that point is taken, Chair. I think that deals with the questions from Honorable Kongubele. I will then go back and start with the questions raised by Honorable Van Dijk. Some of the questions that Honorable Van Dijk raised will be dealt with by the CFO, that I do not, if I do not deal with them. The questions that I will deal with then relates to, firstly, the Northern Cape. There was a question raised about what was the outcome of the licensing process in the Northern Cape. So we published an ITA for the licensing of a commercial sound broadcasting service licensee. The outcome was, in respect of that process, when we go to the end of the process, no one could be licensed for the commercial services because none of the applicants met the requirements. And it could very well be that in respect of this, in respect of this area, council may again issue the ITA again, like we did with the free-to-air TV, where we didn't find the qualifying applicants and we cancel it now, running the process again. So on that one, there was no successful applicant. Honorable Fandek also raised questions around the fees, specifically the user fees that are supposed to be paid by community broadcasting licenses. I think the question was twofold. Do we have a system to check whether people are paying and when they have to pay? There was also a question about where do these fees go. On the system, Chair, I think from a financial perspective, and the CFO will also comment on that one, we have an accounting system that enables us to bill and remind licensees as and when the fees are due. So the licensing system would advise the financial system of the licenses that are still valid. That system will then trigger the necessary invoices to the relevant licensees. As to where the fees go, the money that's collected for USAF, as with the rest of all license fees that ICASA collects, gets transferred directly to the National Revenue Fund. ICASA does not keep any of the fees. And in this past financial year, we transferred about 1.5 million rands to the National Revenue Fund. There was a question around Notice 155 of 2016, and the question was around whether licensees are aware of the notice, and the issue was around the role of managing agents or consultants in the community radio sector. I think, Chair, in terms of informing licensees, you know, with normal licensees, once you publish a gazette, you take it that everyone will pick it up. Because the reality is, every licensee must keep abreast of what the authority publishes insofar as their requirements are concerned. But we accept that with community radio sector, there's challenges of capacity. They don't necessarily have teams of regulatory divisions that sit and monitor this environment. So we proactively try and go to them, and this entails, as the compliance officers go on compliance visits, they then ensure that they bring the station manager or whoever the responsible person is at that particular community radio station up to speed with all the new requirements that may have come out. But I think it's something that we can still do better on. In addition to having the compliance officers going out there, perhaps as we do our community roadshows in the different provinces, we can also use that opportunity to publicize the requirements. The timelines, the Gazette is effective from the date of publication. The questions around the control of community radio stations and the monies that they generate and how it's distributed. I think, Chair, and this sort of links to the moratorium in one respect. There have been serious challenges that we have identified with the community radio sector. The purpose and the rationale behind a community radio station is to serve the community. And the ownership of the community radio station also ought to vest and benefit the community. There are instances where some individuals have become more powerful in certain communities and they have, for lack of a better word, perhaps hijacked the community radio stations and turn them into what they ought not to be. And those instances where we have identified them, we do take the relevant institutions or community authorities to task. So from a regulatory perspective, the annual general meeting that ought to be held every year by the community to plan for the affairs of the radio stations is something that we hold very, very strongly. Where there have been problems, and I know there are a couple of examples, we have literally sent officials to go and pretty much adjudicate over the annual general meeting, just to make sure that there is community participation and also to make sure that the governing structures that govern the community radio stations follow the prescripts of the law. And as I say, in instances where we have found shortcomings and where we have found serious non-compliance, we have referred those for appropriate enforcement action. Then the next category of questions, Chair, came from Honorable Dragon. There was a question around the code for people with disabilities, and the question was around the delays and why it has taken so long and why, or rather when, will it be finalized. I think, Chair, for now, I just wish to state that there is currently a code in place. And that code, I think, is a 2010 or 2011 code. The process that we are now doing is because of the inadequacies of the current code and the development in technology over the years, we are updating that code. And I think, Chair, I'll be the first to admit that the process has taken longer than it ought to. And we are at a stage where now the intention is to have the final code promulgated before the end of the financial year. So to answer the question of when will we finally see the revised code that takes into account all the needs that have been identified, it will be by the end of this financial year. A related question to this was around the cost to communicate and the focus on voice over the years, and the fact that that does not adequately cater for people with specific needs who may need to use text or SMSs or even video calling. I think, Chair, this falls within the broad context of the interventions that have now been mounted by the authority. So I would say the issue relating to the cost of data, as an example, will be covered then by the parallel processes that are underway between us and the Competition Commission inquiry. And I could say, Chair, that one would hope that by the middle of the next financial year, we would get some form of outcome in terms of seeing the cost coming down. Even though operators in the meantime have proactively started reducing some of the costs, but we will still get to the end of the regulatory process where we determine what the reasonable cost ought to be and where necessary impose the regulations. The last question in that cycle, Chair, was around the gender balance and the number of people in the organization with disabilities. So at an organizational level, we're sitting at 47% female and 53% male across all employees in the organization. And then in terms of the people with disabilities, there's currently 9 people in the organization with disabilities. 6 of those are permanent, and 3 are temps. Of the permanent people, 5 are male, 1 is female, and then of the 3 temps, 2 are female and one is male. Then, Chair, I'll move on to the questions raised by Honourable Matsoha around specifically the spectrum for community radio stations. Chair, I think we accept and take the point that we needed to go to the communities properly and explain what this moratorium is, why is it in place, how long will it be in place, and what needs to happen for it to be lifted. And Council has been having discussions and conversations around this issue. Suffice to say, Chair, that when the moratorium was imposed, there were 3 conditions which we said will must happen before it can be lifted. The one was the scarcity of frequencies. The second was that we needed to review the regulatory framework to address the challenges around governance of community radio stations, amongst others. And the third was we needed to streamline the licensing process to avoid a scenario where somebody in Mualakwena decides I want to form a radio station and they just come on their own and they set up an MPO and they apply. We needed to find a process where we could have a process where we open up the applications for community radio stations or even community TV stations at particular cycles during the year and allow everybody who may potentially have an interest in establishing that kind of broadcasting service to come through as opposed to the ad hoc manner. So on the regulatory framework, the review of the regulatory framework, the project is underway. We are hoping to complete it by the end of this current financial year. The review of the standard terms and conditions regulations in terms of streamlining the application process was completed. What then remains an issue is the issue of the frequencies, because at the time that the moratorium was imposed, Council had the idea that with the completion of the digital migration process, the spectrum constraints would be alleviated. But Council now appreciates the delays in that respect. And Council now also appreciates that it is not in all areas where there is spectrum scarcity. So in the metro, in particular, that's where there is serious spectrum constraints. There are areas in the outlying areas and villages where that spectrum constraint does not exist. And Council has been having a conversation around whether it's possible within the constraints of the law to differentiate between the areas so that in the Lephalale area, as an example, where there are no spectrum constraints, you then say you allow the licensing process to happen if it's doable. But in the areas where there are spectrum constraints, then you then hold back pending the lifting of the moratorium. Those conversations are happening at Council, and I would say, Chair, there should be clarity, hopefully, before the end of this quarter in terms of whether the moratorium stays in its current form until it's lifted or whether there is room to differentiate between the areas where the constraints do not apply and therefore do not justify the moratorium. Chair, I think I will then conclude before I hand over to the CFO by dealing with the overarching question raised by Honorable Kalako. And again, it was an issue around the recurring issues that AG has raised around governance and financial management, proper record keeping and compliance monitoring. I think we together with Council, we're just as equally concerned with the recurrence of these findings. And one of the things that we have undertaken just recently from a management perspective, and we have received a report on this in particular, is we have recently undertaken a risk and compliance maturity assessment of the organization, just to identify where we fall short in respect of risk management overall. Because all of these issues, whether you're talking financial management or you're talking record keeping, boil down to an overarching or the need for an overarching risk management framework. The feedback we have received is we are at level zero at the risk maturity or risk and compliance maturity assessment level. And there are a number of interventions that have been proposed in the short term, medium term, and in the long term, which we will be actioning from an executive level, Chair. And we'll be more than happy to share that report with the relevant interventions with the committee. I'm going to pause here, Chair, and allow the Chair to come in, and then the CFO will then deal with the remainder of the questions.
You have 15 minutes.
Just a minute.
You have 15 minutes.
Chair,
as you can't, you have only 15 minutes to round up everything.
Or just on the matter relating to community radio stations from a technical point of view in terms of spectrum. They normally would consider the FM bandwidth, which has got 20 megahertz frequency, and each radio station has got to have 150 kilohertz as a band. If you divide that into the other, you're getting optimally 133 licenses, which means, in a way, you can actually reconfigure, because each community radio license is supposed to reach about 2 kilometers or so. So it can be replicated in other areas. It looks like the configuration was not so much appropriate, and we'll look at that configuration to see if we cannot redistribute, because the frequency here can also be used in Limpopo or somewhere in Eastern Cape or somewhere there, because there won't be any interference except the radio sonar frequency, which is a national radio which will interfere. I just wanted to make that clear. And also going to digital, the digital audio broadcasting will bring a great relief, which is digital, obviously, in providing more services per smaller channel of bandwidth. 1.56 megahertz can give you 6 to 9 of stations. So we are hoping that we'll get there, but things are still under research in that regard.
Okay. Sefo?
Thank you, Chair. Members? Chair, let me start with your question, the first question you raised in terms of managing the relationship with the AG. Yes, that's the most important part of the audit. Those who know or who've been on the other side now moving to the finance side, that you need to manage that relationship. But yes, it's very important also to make sure that there is level of independence. You don't really cloud issues. So with that one, we do have a relationship, a good relationship with the AG. Hence, we said, yes, we agree with your findings and we take your findings as value-adding. Hence, we said we will implement controls with immediate effect. The agreement was on quarterly basis, we will report to them in terms of our audit action plan. Actually, the report I was presenting, we do have a consolidated report for all entities that was consolidated by the department. I thought that the report was actually tabled, but it will come if it was not submitted. It will give breakdown in terms of the issue, so it will address the audit action plan that was requested. These are two different reports. We have this one dealing with foodless and wasteful and irregular. We have another audit plan that is consolidating all other findings that were raised by the AG. So as indicated earlier, we were I was supposed to meet with the AG 2 weeks ago, and I was informed the senior in charge, who was in charge of the audit, has since left. So we need to build a new relationship with the person who will be taking over. So these are the issues we'll discuss with them before our next audit committee. So as indicated on the report, when it's submitted, Chair, you'll see we also said it is our responsibility to table progress towards resolving the issues on quarterly basis to the audit committee and council for approval before we submit to the minister. So those are the engagements. Coming back to the issue raised by Honourable Member Dragon on the attrition stats. Yes, the observation is correct. The template or the projected table there is not correct. I realized when I was presenting earlier that the presentation we have actually is not the latest that we updated. So the table will have a different figure where we corrected the actual figures. So we do apologize for that, Chair, and we will make sure that the document is actually shared with Honourable Members. And now going back to the issue raised by Honourable Afande on the increase in terms of council expenditure. In 2015-16 financial year, we had 3 council members. And beginning April 2017-16, which is the financial year under review, the number increased to 7. Hence, the expenditure increased. So on annual basis over the years, we were actually having, that was having an impact in terms of additional expenditure that we have to return to Treasury, because we did not have these members at council level who occupied the offices, because it's not only relating to salaries, including expenditure allocated for operational costs. So we have actually increased the number to 7 with the new council members who joined. The slide that was actually circulated also indicates, the updated one indicates the effective date. Unfortunately, the one we presented was not the updated one. That number decreased to 5 when the 2 members left the organization in February. But that was towards the end of the financial year, hence the movement won't have major impact. And there was another issue on imbezzles, Honorable Marshall. We do have regional stakeholder engagement sessions, but in our case, we don't call them imbezzles. Yes, we used to assist the previous minister with the imbezzles because that was another way of cutting costs from our side. So what we have now with our regional division, actually need to finalize that project this week. We have regional stakeholder engagement dealing with issues relating to CCC mandate, dealing with issues how do you actually report an issue. That will also cover issues relating to the moratorium that we are currently dealing with and how do you go about applying, because we realize that most of the, based on the study we did last year, most of the people, they are not aware of what is ICASA. Actually, ICASA started coming up after the issue on data mass form. That's when people started knowing about ICASA and the role of ICASA. So we have actually picked up that issue long time ago. So we will continue with that. In previous years, we were doing that through the assistance of GCIS, because we were buying airtime from GCIS just to make sure that we cut costs in terms of one of our processes of implementing cost-cutting measures. So we will keep on reporting on these interventions going forward. I thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Prof?
Before I hand over to the DJ, are you done?
Yes, I just want to say...
With responses?
With responses, I think I'm...
Okay.
It depends on...
Alright. You have only 10 minutes if there is anything, members, as a follow-up, or we can save that time for FPB. Mr.
No, to me, it's just a general comment. And I think what was raised, maybe we'll continue to teach you. You see, when you say you want to achieve something, you give it a name. It can only mean that if you say access to data, it's not access by some spurious things, it's access by people. Remember, your regulatory framework is not what our people want. Even your fiber is not what they want. What they want is access. So it's always important that when you set goals or objectives, what you say you have achieved, we check how far you have gone in that goal which you have articulated. You then say, our goal is to reach Johannesburg by tomorrow. And then you say, no, and we're buying tickets. That's an achievement. You can't say that. But if you say our goal is to reach Johannesburg, you have moved 100 kilometers. You see, 100 kilometers towards Johannesburg. But you can't say, no, we're still looking for a copy ticket. Now go through, say, no, this is an achievement. No, you can't. This is the essence of performance information. I'm sorry, DHOD, you understand what I'm saying. So all I'm saying, let's put our language right. You can't. I mean, don't be resistant. Yeah. Like I was saying, if your goal is effective management, in order to have effective management, you must have a CEO. You can't say our achievement is effective management because the CEO has been recruited. That's not effective management. Have a recruitment of a CEO. Do I make sense? That's the tightness and the strictness of performance language. Because we want to talk about the things we're talking about, not the things we wish to talk about. Those are my closing remarks. Not the things we wish to talk about.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ICASA. Now we may go to FNFPB. FNB. One money. So we must talk about the bank. Can you quickly move to and take position the FPV?
Engagements with FPB, we are
going through their action plan on how they plan to address the issues that have been raised by the AG. I think at this point, possibly the last thing to reflect is that the MPP appeal tribunal has a one-member vacant, which the minister is currently considering to fill. Chairperson, without wasting further time, I'll hand over to MPP for the presentation.
Thank you very much, TG. MPP Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just before the COO makes the presentation, we just want to highlight a few critical projects for the financial year and to say to honourable members that indeed it has been a challenging year but also a productive year. Organisation, I would like to, on behalf of Council, give an assurance that the organisation is functioning and it's stable. We are going to fill the positions as the DG has already indicated. Amongst the critical projects in this year was the launch of the classification certification program that we are doing with the University of South Africa, the online content regulation system, which is up and running as of end of September, and we are going to experience a new way of doing our work in line with the developments and the completion on the amendments of the Act, and which is currently before the House. We have participated extensively in the outreach and in ESOS and in the outreach programs on cyber safety. We also did a lot of work with the SEPs in assisting and the MPA assisting with the analysis of illegal content amounting to tens of thousands of images, both video, digital, and still images, which led to the arrest of a pedophile who got 35 life terms and 190 years in prison, and another one in June. Is going to be sentenced this week. We have a very concrete program on cyber safety, and Honourable Chair and members, we are doing our best to have our cost saving initiatives because our funding is very limited, and we remain stable on an unqualified audit. We were really hoping for something better, which we unfortunately could not get. And lastly, honourable members, that even though we have had these challenging situations, we came here prepared to give highlights on the issue of the CEO and COO, and so we will submit the report as requested. We'll work flat out over the weekend to do just that. And then we remain a going concern, and we'd like to thank the Executive Authority for the support and the support of the Portfolio Committee and staff of MPP. I'd like to hand over now to our COO to present our report. Thank you.
You introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, honourable members. Okay, that's a bit loud. My name is Abongile Mashele. I'm the Acting Chief Operations Officer at the Film and Publication Board. I'd like to extend my greetings to the members of the Portfolio Committee and the department and other members of the public that are in the gallery today. I'm going to be presenting on our annual report. The chairperson has requested that I introduce the rest of our delegation. We have with us Ms. Lillian Pata, who's the Acting Chief Operations Officer at the FPB. Chief Executive Officer, CEO. Yes. And then we have Mr. Vulezani Matiza, who is the acting chief financial officer at the FPB. Chief operating officer. CEO. CFO.
And
I'm going to take members through the annual report of the Film and Publication Board for the 2016-17 financial year. My colleague, Mr. Matiza, will take us through the financial component in the report, including the audit report findings and outcomes. Just to apologize, honorable members, the presentation that was sent, I think, 2 weeks ago, I've just rearranged it so that the financials are at the end so that we don't jump in and out between presenters and the presentation. So I've recirculated and we've printed the version that we are flighting on screen right now.
And in terms of content?
The content is the same, Chair. Our presentation will take you through the mandate of the Film and Publication Board, but I won't go through in detail, taking direction from what the Chair had said to ICASA. We'll go through the organizational achievements, highlights for the year, some of the cost-saving measures we've put in place, the financial performance of the organization, the organizational performance of the organization, and then the audit report as well. I'm not going to go into detail on the mandate. Suffice to say, we are the institution that gives you assurance when you go to the cinema with your children. You are assured that there is no harmful content that your kids will be exposed to because someone at FPB has looked through it. In essence, that's what we do. Our vision and mission and values have not changed much in the last 2 years. We continue to have a vision and aspire to be a leading and credible content regulator in South Africa, dare to say even in the continent one day. Our mission is to ensure the regulation of media entertainment content by empowering the public, contributing to child protection and promoting the growth of the industry. And those are the values that we hope to embody as we do our business as the FPB, talking to accountability, human dignity, social justice, integrity, professionalism and innovation. In terms of the achievements that we've attained in the year that we are reporting on, we've received an unqualified audit. Even though we have not moved towards clean audit, it is an achievement to have an unqualified audit as the Film and Publication Board. Okay. There's been an overall reduction in the number of findings from 14 to 8. We've classified more than 1,800 titles that have been submitted to the Film and Publication Board. We've identified 2,804 unregistered distributors that are operating throughout the country. We have reached more than 24,000 learners as part of our outreach and awareness campaigns. We also target parents and educators in our outreach and awareness campaigns. We've also had, just as a sidebar, quite a lot of media coverage in the year around issues of online content regulation, the Film and Publications Amendment Bill, and changes in the industry and how FPB seeks to be a role player in that. We've attained 86% of our targets that we had planned for in the year. The FPB Amendment Bill is currently being deliberated by the Portfolio Committee, so at least there has been some progress in that regard. We concluded a study on the tariffs that we are currently charging as the Film and Publication Board, because our current tariff structure does not talk to the reviewed regulatory model that we are working towards as the Film and Publication Board. So we did that in the year. We developed the online content regulation system, assisting us to become more tech-savvy in terms of how we do content classification in the country. We piloted the decentralization of FPB administrative and classification services to our Durban office. We've just concluded that pilot at the end of September, and we will review and see if we can spread it to other parts of the country. We also launched a course with UNISA on classification of media content in South Africa. This is the first in the world. It's a course that basically professionalizes the function of content classification, and it is housed in the UNISA School of Law, and it's one of the modules that are there for people who want to study law and media law in particular. And as the FPB, we have sponsored that course that is currently with UNISA right now. So those are just high level the achievements of the organization in the year. Just in terms of the trends, I'm not going to go into detail, I think we've already touched. On a quarterly basis, I think we review over 400 titles per quarter on average. Games, it's about 62. We also do online inspections because online content distributors are not required to submit material to FPB before they distribute it. We do around 1,279 inspections per quarter as the FPB. In the 16-17 financial year, we accrued regulatory income to the value of 6,718,000. Of the material that we classify, predominantly the type of content that is coming through the South African market contains language and violence in the ages between 13 and 16. We registered 447 new distributors. This number has not necessarily increased much. We've actually seen a decline in the number of new distributors that we register in the country. We renewed 1,756 distribution licenses. We received two appeals, and I think this is something to be commended in terms of our classification decisions. Out of the 1,800 decisions that we made in the year, only two were appealed by industry. And in terms of child abuse content that we analyzed, as the chairperson had already said, we received 22 cases from the South African Police Services. And from those 22 cases, there were more than 450,000 images / videos that our content analysts had to review and inform SAPS and the National Prosecuting Authority whether those images contain child pornography or not. From those 22, 12 cases were confirmed to contain child pornography, and they are being prosecuted. Others have been concluded. From an HR perspective, in the year, we had 95 staff members, the workforce, we had 95. African, it was 78. Colored 4, Indian 7, white 6. Our staff is largely 58% female and 37% male. And these are just some of the industrial relations cases that we were dealing with in the year. Some were closed off, others were not closed off. There are two cases of two employees that are currently with the labor court where the staff members took material that was submitted for classification at the FPB, unauthorized access to a restricted area, and they were subsequently dismissed. They've been appealing these dismissals in the labor court. The matters are still pending. We also had an anonymous complaint that an FPB employee did not disclose misconduct with another government department, and the FPB did not screen the employee properly. We held a disciplinary hearing to inquire into the matter. The employee was found not guilty of gross dishonesty and misrepresentation, and the whistleblower was informed. There was also a matter of the former legal manager who cited constructive dismissal with CCMA. We reached an agreement where we parted with a 3.5 month monetary settlement. Now, in terms of our performance information, the acting CFO will touch on the audit opinion, Honorable Kungubeng. He will touch on the opinion on the performance information. suffice to say that from our side as the FPB, there was an issue in terms of the methodology that the AG used to audit performance in this financial year. but I won't go into detail on those issues. But as the Film and Publication Board, we would say our performance was quite good. Of the 75 targets that we had, we achieved 86% of those. One of the things that we've acknowledged, though, in the current financial year is that we have too many targets. So we have worked quite significantly to try and reduce the number of targets in the APP that we are currently implementing in the current financial year. In terms of strategic outcome one, which is talking to our regulatory function to ensure efficient classification and compliance of industry, we attained 74% of our targets and 26% were not attained. In SO2, where we are talking about public education and awareness, we attained 100% of our targets. In SO3, which is talking to organizational capacity and capability, we attained 89% of our targets with 11% not achieved. In SO4, which is talking to our capability to regulate the online space more effectively and build up our ICT capacity, we attained 91% of our targets with 9% not achieved. And lastly, in SO5, which is talking to stakeholder management, we attained 100% of our targets. That is just a pie chart representation of our targets. I'm on slide 14. I'm going to move very fast when it comes to the achieved and rather focus on the non-achieved and explain the variance in terms of why we did not achieve a particular target that we set out to achieve. In our report, we have the annual target, the results, the year-to-date analysis, the evidence that we put together to support what we say we have achieved, and reason for variance where there is a variance. The first target that we did not achieve was the implementation of an automated process for the classification process in the organization. Now, the system, we put together an examination reporting management system that was implemented and in the year. What we did not manage to do was to have all the reports by chief classifiers and quality assurers uploaded on the system by the time the financial year ended. So that was the main reason why we did not attain that target, because one of the indicators was not just talking to the system, but it was saying, in order for us to assess the efficiency of that system, we need to see how many reports are uploaded, because we are now measuring the outcome and the utility of the system. So we, because we had put that indicator for ourselves, we were unable to meet that target. The second one is to conduct a review of the FPB online audit process. We were unable to conduct the online audits because there was a high dependency on the FPB online content regulation system, which the chairperson indicated was finalized towards the end of the financial year. So in the duration of that financial year, we were unable to conduct these audit processes. We classified all material, as I already indicated, all legible material was classified. We implemented our classification governance framework. We managed to roll out the classification training manual to all classifiers and contracted online distributors. On a quarterly basis, we hold workshops with our classifiers as well as our distributors just to train them on the classification guidelines. Another target was that was not achieved was the review and the approval of the labeling system for the FPB. The strategy was submitted to council for approval. The draft strategy was only finalized in quarter four due to capacity challenges in the organization. So it was not finalized, nor was it approved in the year. The second target that was not approved was the approval and implementation of the online content regulation policy. With this one, we realized that with the amendments in the bill being highly, being a close association between the bill process and the policy, we realized that we should hold the policy in abeyance until The bill has passed and there is regulatory certainty that is provided by the legislation. So that is why that was not achieved. We managed to review and implement our classification tools for online games and applications. We managed to implement implementation of internationally reviewed guidelines. We conducted conversion surveys with 9,000 respondents across the Republic of South Africa. The conversion surveys are basically a tool we use to assess the impact of our classification decisions and to also assess whether members of the public continue to agree with what we do as the FPP or have we completely gone off track. In SO1 still, we conducted four focus groups to assess the implementation of the classification guidelines. We developed and implemented our revised fee structure and tariff for physical and online content classification. We implemented the regulation and ensured compliance to the FP Act. We identified 2,848 unregistered distributors. The one target that we did not manage to achieve in terms of our compliance monitoring activities was to ensure that 25% of that 2,848 converts and becomes a distributor that is legally converted to be legal and compliant. But that target we were unable to meet, and honorable members will understand that it is largely dependent on the distributor themselves, whether they want to comply or not. Many opt to close shop, or some opt to move to other parts of business premises, and when our compliance monitors go back, there's no one there anymore. We conducted online compliance monitoring activities, and I think I had already spoken to those. These are also our compliance monitoring activities where we conducted raids. We had a target of 24 raids. We overachieved on this one. We actually conducted 94 raids. And just to emphasize, the raids, we do not do them ourselves because we are not law enforcement. We are highly dependent on the South African Police Services with whom we do the raids in conjunction with. I'm on slide 19 now. The last target that we did not achieve in SO1 was the target that talks to our research and knowledge management program, which talks to partnering with at least two universities to leverage research capacity and assist FPP with knowledge creation. Like I'd already said, we managed to partner with UNISA where we sponsored that course. The second partnership, we were unable to proceed because there were National Treasury requirements that stipulate that you cannot approach a partner directly if you will be using state funds to fund whatever activities that are there in that partnership. Even if it is a university, you need to advertise on the database of National Treasury and receive proposals. We followed that course of action. But the proposals that we received did not necessarily respond to what it is that we wanted to do. So what we have done is we have deferred this target to the current financial year, and we are still trying to see if we can find universities that we can partner with where we can get students to assist with conducting some of the research work that FPP needs to do. We developed our information hub and we marketed it in the industry and we continue to maintain it. In SO2, Chair, this is the strategic outcome that is talking to consumers, general members of the public and the industry being informed about the mandate of the Film and Publication Board. This largely talks to external communications where we have our newsletter. It's an external newsletter that we share with industry as well. We managed to publish 8 newsletters in the year. On opinion pieces, we managed to publish 3 opinion pieces. We held media dialogues, 4 media dialogues. Our television and interview targets, we exceeded those. And also our outreach activities. We had 32 outreach activities across the country, and that's where the 24,000 learners were reached that I referred to a bit earlier on. We increased our social media numbers by 16.5%, and we compiled digital monitoring and evaluation reports so that we can assess the effectiveness of our activities on social media. And we also had our staff workshops, and that's the internal communications component. In SO3, which is largely talking to our internal operations as the Film and Publication Board, it's the strategic outcome that is talking to efficient and effective management of the FPB operations. It includes your HR targets, your finance targets, your risk management, internal audit, governance, etc., etc. The target, the first target that was not achieved was the implementation of a remuneration strategy where we implement a multi-year agreement pay progression plan. This was not achieved because the multi-year component, there was no agreement with all parties on what would be the agreement on a multi-year level for salary increases. But I must say that for the current financial year, we have reached agreement with all parties. The target that's talking to change management was achieved, where we revised, implemented, and evaluated our change management program. We also achieved our target to implement organizational skills plan, where we capacitate our team to upskill to make sure that they are able to respond to the changes in the industry that we work in. The target that's talking to implement and revise the succession plan was improved. We approved our FPB HR strategy and it was implemented. I'm going to go on slide 24. I'm going to go right at the bottom at the target that was not achieved. The target says implementation of a call center system to ensure efficient service delivery. We did implement our call center system, but there was a sub-component of that where we were going to assess the effectiveness of the implementation of the call center system by checking the turnaround times when it comes to responding to public queries. We were unable to meet the component of the turnaround times of the queries, and this was largely due to delays, internal delays in responding to queries received. In SO3, we managed to achieve the target that talks to decentralization of administration to regional offices. That's the one I referred to earlier in our highlights. We managed to conduct quarterly surveys to assess quality of service rendered, targeting at least 150 respondents. We also looked at our organizational risk maturity levels. We achieved all of these targets. The target that was not achieved in SO3, the next one is on slide 26, which is the annual update and implementation of the business continuity management plan and disaster recovery plan. We have the policies in place, and we were unable to achieve this one largely because we did not have a disaster recovery site for a portion of the year towards the end of the year. And we were in the process of procuring that site, and the appointment had not yet been finalized. We implemented the organizational performance planning. We did our plans with the accounting authority, with management, and with staff in the organization. And on a quarterly basis, we reviewed the reports and the evidence supported by managers. Our internal audit also verifies our performance information. There was 100% compliance with supply chain management policies. We implemented contract management directives, and there was accountability for all assets and quarterly physical verification of all assets of the organization. There was 100% compliance with the corporate governance framework, and we implemented the annual council program, all meetings set as they were scheduled to sit. In SO4, Strategic Outcome 4 talks to the ensuring the effective and innovative regulation of content distributed online, on mobile and related platforms to protect children and inform the general public. The only target that we did not meet here, honorable members, is the target that is talking to the online content regulation system. The system was developed was in a pilot phase. The system was not reviewed as it was in a pilot phase. A post-implementation review was to be conducted once the system is live. In SO4, we met all our ICT targets. And in SO5 as well, that is talking to our stakeholder, expanding our stakeholder footprint through partnerships and stakeholder relations in pursuance of our mandate. We managed to implement the stakeholder relations plan, where we engage with the film industry in the different film festivals that you get across the country, child protection agencies, as well as child protection NGOs, law enforcement agencies, and as I already demonstrated in some of our compliance monitoring activities, the technology sector to be kept abreast of the changes in the technology, film schools and government departments as well. We also establish and engage stakeholders in the continent, because one of our greatest aspirations is to develop a regional content classification system, because with the digital shift, it will be difficult for online distributors to engage with only one institution. It's easier when you have a regional approach to content regulation. So we do a lot of stakeholder engagement in SADC and also in the rest of the continent. And markedly, we have a partnership with the Kenyan Content Classification Agency. We hosted 4 quarterly stakeholder engagement sessions, including the CEO's engagements per quarter. We hosted these with the film industry, the Kenyan delegation, which came to visit FPD, Women's Day. We've also held LGBTI workshops in the Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal. We also had a Web Rangers program, which is a national program that we are rolling out in partnership with industry, where we encourage peer-to-peer education on cyber safety of learners in schools. We also, towards the end of the targets, developed 4 partnership assessment reports, and we also attended 4 film and gaming festivals in the country. And largely our approach at these festivals is to educate the film industry about the compliance obligations to the film and publications legislation and the work. I'm going to hand over to Mr. Matisa to take us through the financial report. Thank you.
Just before that, members, there is tea and coffee outside. We are not going to break for tea. You can go grab a cup, come back, and we'll continue. CFO?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Greetings to honorable members, to the acting DG and the communication colleagues, as well as the stakeholder and other people from the public. I will be taking you through the financials and the audit outcome that we received from AEG. I felt that it's important that we highlight the money that we spent on consultant, because this is one of the areas that AEG liked to focus on, because the emphasis was that we should not spend more money on consultant. We spent 2.7 million for 16-17 financial year, and the 45,000 was spent on risk management, which is our fraud hotline that we have with Vuvuzela. And we spent 159,000 on pastor and casework consulting. And this is basically for the business intelligence system that we have developed, so that when we report in terms of finances to the council, we are reporting something that is automated and not at the manual intervention. And then we also spend 812 on FPB Council legal consultation. This is for the investigation that we were doing. And we spend 584 on labor matters. This is because of some of the few matters that have been referred to labor court. So you know that in labor court, lawyers are a little bit expensive, but we are hoping to finalize all those matters and close them. And we also spent 570 on the bill amendments. So we needed a technical advice on some of the bill issues that we couldn't do ourselves. And we spent 552 on the legal services. On the next slide, we basically highlighting the cost saving measures that we have implemented as management and council to ensure that we don't spend much money on enablers, but we spend more money on flagship projects. So on the system maintenance, we managed to reduce it from 1.9 to 1.7, which is 10%. And then we also managed to reduce the external audit fees with AG by making sure that when they request, you know, information, we submit it as effectively as possible so that they don't spend much money in the office. So we reduced that by 11%. And then workshop and meetings, we managed to reduce that by 592,000, which is 37%, by making sure that some of the workshop that we have in meetings, we have them internally as opposed to going to the outside venue, you know, which I feel that is very much important because we needed to save money on that line item. We also saved 38% on telephone and fax, particularly on data, by making sure that we do an audit and making sure that we have limit on people that are using this, because we have realized that people have a tendency of abusing, you know, data that is allocated, you know, using state funds. So we have ensured that we save about 170,000, which is a big amount. And then on international travel and domestic travel, we also ensured that we save some of the money there. On international is 51%, which is about 1.1 million, by ensuring that we stick to the cost containment measure that have been introduced by National Treasury to ensure that if ever there are delegations that are going to the same matter, at least maximum of 3 must go and not 10. Or 5 people, you know, because people sometimes, you know, tend to abuse travel. So we felt that it's important that we tighten measures on those line items so that we can save money. And then we also save about 326 on advertising by making sure that we don't utilize newspapers solely, but we also use the website and your e-tender portal. So we save about 98% on that. And then the overall amount that we save was 4.4 million, which is quite good, you know, in terms of the cost saving measures. So we allocated that amount to our flagship projects, you know, such as industry compliance. Moving along to the next slide, this is just basically to highlight the statement of financial performance to indicate to the committee that where we are standing in terms of the performance financially. You can see that in terms of revenue overall for March 2017, we generated 94.3 million. And then we spent 90 million of that with a surplus of about 4.3 million. I will go into the detail in the next slide. With respect to revenue, we generated 6.7 million from regulation fee as compared to 5.8 million that we generated in the previous year. So there was an increase by 15.8%. Which is quite good news for us because this revenue is generated from online distribution fee, an area that we were getting a little bit of challenge in terms of distributors cooperating. But this is important, you know, to highlight that we are happy that, you know, we can have a much generated income from our own revenue, you know, in the form of online distribution fees, because we can see that it seems like the trend, you know, everything is going online. So if we can generate more money from online services, I mean, it gives us confidence as management that we will at least have more money to spend on the mandate that we do as Film and Publication Board. And then on other income, we generated 1.1 million, and then this is basically because of the good planning from our part, by making sure that if ever we've got excess cash that we are not using, we invest it on time and spend it on time. So we capitalize on timing and making sure that in terms of proper cash flow, we are taking advantage of investing on time. And then on the overall income that we received for the year, it was 94.3 million compared to the 89.0 that we received in the previous financial year. So the increase was about 6%, of which the large amount is coming from the grant that we received from Department of Communication. In 2016-17 financial year, we managed to retain the surplus from National Treasury, and then we used the money to finance the online content regulation project that we started in the prior year. I have to indicate that we indeed spent 100% of the money that has been allocated to us when you look at the cash itself, not accounting. So we spent all the money that we received. Okay, continuing to the next slide, which talks to the expenditure for 16-17. We spent 49.9 million on the staff cost, and this also includes our independent, you know, classifiers that classify the movies that we classify in terms of the mandate. And then in terms of the operational expenditure, we spent 37.4 million. This has slightly decreased from 37.9 million as compared to the prior year. And this is due to some of the cost measures that we have been implemented, like the 51% that we have reduced on the international travel, the 8% on the telephone expenditure, as well as 98% on advertising. Okay, moving to the audit report. On the audit report, we received unqualified audit opinion, and the matter of emphasis was the fact that we have restated our corresponding figures for prior year, and also the material non-compliance, which is the issue around measurability and reliability of the performance information. When we actually look at the table from 14-15 financial year in terms of the audit outcome that we've been receiving, we've been on the stagnation mode, meaning that we didn't change in terms of the status from 14-15, 15-16 and 16-17 financial year. But I think it's important to highlight the fact that when you actually look at the findings themselves, there is a movement, because we had about 37 findings in 14-15 financial year, and then we reduced that to 14 findings in 15-16 financial year, and now in 16-17 financial year that we are reporting on, we only had 8 findings. So there is hope that we are moving towards the green, you know, color, which is clean audit. Moving to the audit outcome in terms of the risk areas, you can see that all the tables there are green, meaning that we are actually doing well, I mean, in terms of progress, you know, from the prior year. Because, I mean, if you can look at the quality of submitted financials, we are green. If you look at the financial health, we are green. If you look at HR management, we are green. If you look at information technology, we are green. If you look at supply chain management, we are green. So the only issue that spoiled us from getting the green audit is the performance information, of which I will go into detail a little bit later. So if we look at the audit report maybe in detail, I think it's important that I must highlight the fact that for the very first time in 20 years, we submitted the financial statement that never had any changes from the original one, of which, I mean, it just shows that we are getting there, you know, as an institution, and we definitely, you know, going to get a clean audit, you know, because our finances are clean, are looking good as far as the AG is concerned. And we have identified, disclosed and implemented all the consequence management for all the irregular and fruitless expenditure that we have disclosed in the AFS note. Even though, I mean, the AGSA did not identify any misstatement on the financial statement, they found some of the material issues on the performance information. And this is basically based on the approach or the methodology that the AG decided to focus on, because this is the first time that we are having this kind of an issue. And we can't say that it's a build-up or it's a recurring issue. But maybe I must highlight that maybe this is because we had the new team from AG, so they have a different perspective in terms of the methodology and how they apply, you know, smartness principle, because we were challenging them in terms of the treasury framework, but we didn't win. So the above, you know, assessment resulted in us getting a modified audit report. Moving to the next slide. This is just a comparison of the audit findings in terms of the category that we had, you know, in the 15-16 financial year. So we had about five findings that relate to revenue and receivable, two findings that relate to disclosure, one on the SCM, one on performance, and five on the ICT. And then when you actually compare that with the 16-17 on the next slide, you can actually see that there is a reduction from 14 to 8 findings. So we had one on HR, two on SCM, two on performance information, and then three on ICT. And then just to go in terms of a little bit of detail on the next slide, in terms of the progress that we made, we managed to reduce the ICT findings from 5 findings to 3 findings. And then we managed to reduce the disclosure-related finding to 4, from 4 to 0. And then in terms of the regression, where we regressed, it's on HR, we reduced it from 0 to 1 findings. And then performance information, we had only 1 finding, but now we have 2. And then on SCM, it was 1, now it's actually 2. Maybe it's important to note the fact that all these findings, 8 findings that we have, only 1 finding is the one that is significant, which is on performance. The other findings are on admin matters. We didn't have any findings. Now we have 1 finding on human resources. Okay, my apologies. Maybe it's just the issue of language. Okay, maybe just to continue on the next slide. 93% of all the findings that we had in the prior year, we managed to resolve them, and this is also reported by AG on the audit report that they were happy with all the issues that we have managed to resolve. And they also reported, you know, the improvement in terms of the quality on the financial statement that we submitted, as well as the issue of internal controls and the intervention. And then on the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we managed to reduce this from 487,000 in the 15-16 financial year to only 98,000 in the current year. And 50,000 of that is on irregular expenditure. It's coming from prior year that we are just waiting for National Treasury to grant the condonation on that. And then the 48,000 relate to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is the issues that we are actually dealing on. We have already recovered some of the money. Okay, moving on to the next slide. This is just the issues that you need to note on performance information. The matter that has been raised by AGSA had not been raised in the prior year, because on the prior year, the finding around performance information was actually on the actual target that we didn't submit, you know, the evidence. It was not around the SMART principle. And then in terms of the methodology that they conducted in the current year, it's different from the one that they used in the prior year. As I've already indicated, that maybe it's because it's the new team, because in terms of the technical indicator descriptors and the evidence, they were not reviewed or considered as part of the audit. And then we did raise, you know, the issue with AGSAS management, but we didn't win, and we just decided to comply with what AG want, and then we decided to change and put all the performance indicators that they actually wanted. And then moving on to the last slide, which is more of a conclusion, we have raised all the issues that AG has raised on the performance information. And then we resubmitted to the executive authority for approval. And then all the existing vacancies that we have advertised and the recruitment process is underway. And we are requesting that the portfolio committee to note that the annual report was tabled to the ministry on the 19th of September. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything, Chair?
Nothing, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay. Members, yeah, this is the time for questions. Honorable Van Dijk, Drachan, Kongver, Matisha.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you for the nice annual presentation. Your annual report is always very creative, and we do appreciate the effort you put in. I also want to say that I see on page 35 that you actually made a profit of the presentation, and I want to commend you on the fact that your irregular and fruitless expenditure, that there's a decrease, and that also answers to the concerns of the chair to bring the board members or council members, because actually you do have money for that then. Then I also want to refer back to the AG report with regards to the fact that it is said that the FBB regressed the material findings reported and off all four programs, but I heard what you said with regards to the findings, even though it's 3 years. My question would be, most of the targets that you have not achieved seem to be beyond your control, as you mentioned, And I want to know, in what way do your targets comply with the SMART requirements of National Treasury? Then I also want to ask on the matter of, I just want to get a clarity on that. The CEO had arrangement with Filima Publications for car hire. Was that was settled by the end of November, the amount of 176,036. And I just want to know, was it settled by the CEO or was it the FBB? There was also on page 100, let me just go back, first page 34 of the Angel Report, it mentioned of 20 million rand of advertising. I want to know whether indeed how much of that money went to community media and how much went to mainstream media. Then I want to know, on page 100 of your annual report, you under contingencies, you mention about the of payouts, except there's no mention of the payouts except for where an employee has been taken to the CCMA and with a referral to liabilities of 2.825 million. I want to know, what is the total spent by the Filima Publications on legal settlements? And then I also want to refer you on to page 33, because I just want to get clarity. Those legal settlements, does that include the amounts that's mentioned here on page 33, or are these extra amounts, the council legal consultation or the labour matters? And I want to request that we get a written report on the legal counsel matters and also the labour matters, so that we can just see where does the money go to. And also for this period, I want to know what is the vacancy rate for the period under review. Then there's still one more question. With regards to the reduction in the international travel and national travel, 5 million still seems high for me, so I also want a written report on that. I want to know what were the reasons for the flight and who undertook them. And the other question I just want to get clarity on is also page 35. I just want to, can just maybe clear my mind, is the, what is the percentage of personnel salaries compared to the operational, the staff component to the operational grant or the operational money available. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Certain COO, correct me if I'm wrong, you said COO, this one. You said unqualified is progress. I can't remember, but you said something I don't understand. I mean, if you are unqualified, you said there is improvement. Explain that to me, but also 14, 15, 16, 17. I can't remember where it was, on audit outcomes, what did report. 14, 15, 16, 17, stagnation on audit outcomes. I'm not sure where is the improvement there. But it says unqualified findings. I mean, three consecutive financial years, same thing. Is it four? So, I mean, what are you missing as FPP? again, CFO, if it's the language of yourselves to say from 0 to 1, what will you say? Because you're saying it's maybe some other language. But it's reflected here on HR, family members, it's on audit progress made 16-17, regression in the following categories, human resources 0 to 1. It may be correct at the top there, but when you're communicating with us, you projected something else from 0 to 1. You said it's on audit progress. I don't see the pages here. Okay. No, no, it's in his report. It's in his report. It says audit progress made. Okay. Human resources 0 to 1 finding. And you're saying that is language. I'm not sure what language. Or the heading is fine. It's the regression. Heading is fine, but when you communicated to us, you said something else, and I asked you, and you were saying it's language. I'm not sure whether it was a mistake. I'm not saying respond now.
Oh, okay.
So that you clarify me better if my understanding is of a lay person. Honorable Jacques.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation. I see that the FPB, you are doing a lot of work, and I'm impressed with the work that you're doing. And I also see that under consumer, general members of the public, and industry information, the informing the mandate of FPB, I see that, but I would like to raise a concern from my constituency. For 6 to 8 years, the Deaf Federation of South Africa has been trying to make contact with FPB, with your CEO, for a meeting, and no such meeting has been taken place. So I'd like to find out why there is no response from the community, from the disabled community, when they want to meet with you. I've asked what concerns the DEFSA wanted to raise, in particular with FPB, and so this is the response that I've just received. DEFSA took part in the survey related to public perceptions and the use of FPB classifications, but they were ignored. So why were they not included? Why was their contribution not included? DVDs in the shops, we see at the back of the DVD cover that it's approved by the FPB, but the deaf community's concern is that there are more DVDs being imported into the country and less of them have subtitling. So DEFSA would like to know, why are there fewer DVDs containing subtitles, and what is FPB's intervention or involvement with that in particular? Do you support the deaf community or in that regard, or are you unable to give that support? And then, so when FPB does the screening and the classification, so DEFSA would like to raise awareness regarding that subtitles are not always available on the material. So we would like your support of the deaf community in that regard. So since 2008, DEFSA is aware that the Act doesn't say anything, so we'd like you to raise the community, like to raise that awareness as well. I also see, and congratulations on cyber, your involvement with giving information regards to cyber safety or cyber issues. So your cyber issues are related to the safety of children, and we applaud that. And then you train educators. You train educators about cyber issues.
I would like to know, the educators of deaf children in deaf schools, are they given the same education? Because my concern is that there are many deaf children who don't know the dangers that come up related to cyber issues. So do you provide training, do you provide information to deaf children? And I have a huge concern because I'm seeing the rise in social media and violence against children within social media. And it's children themselves who make these videos or who film what is happening. You know, it makes us aware that the dangers of what's happening, and it should be, but some of these videos are dangerous because it's a breach of confidentiality of the child. The child is under 18. So where does the FTB come in to educate children themselves and protect children themselves about that? That they film these videos and broadcast them on social media. But it affects the children, it affects the child's self-esteem and confidence. So what role does FTB play in those situations? I'm covered, Chair.
Thank you. So let's start with the much of a list so that we don't break the line.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Now I'm very impressed about your presentation. I don't know that to like personally. I don't know the others. I have just few questions, Chair. It's not even a hard question. I think in terms of the achievement you mentioned about the awareness campaigns, your outreach, it doesn't reflect in that 24,000 learners across how many in each province, because you have to tell us, because we want to be clear, how many in each province. Secondly, you talk about the beneficiary, I just want to know about the benefit, the beneficiaries in terms of the UNISA course, who's benefiting in those courses, and what that course is for employer staff or what? I just need that clarity. Lastly, Chair, I'm curious also about the case, a labor court case that was pending. You're also saying you are waiting set down date. I'm not clear about that. What is it? What is that cost about it? Just to clarify about that. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm supposed to read further. But if you don't mind, I need to clarify about that. Chair, let me stop there because I thought you would give me a chance. I'm glad these two guys.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kumbe.
Thank you. I think I must confess, Chair, up front, there is a positive feeling one has in interacting with the presentation. There is a palpable sense of commitment and an attempt not to miss the presentations. And I think it starts there. But however, it does not get you off the hook not to be asked to explain why it's taken the issue over 4 years. What the chair said. 4 years of stagnation. Now, can you mean it conjures that positive feeling one has? Why are we comfortable with this area over 4 years? Because AFS progressed nicely.
to clean. Now, this issue of performance information that the CFO is trying to spin. I'm sorry, he left to the previous presenters. You see, the problem, CFO, is that results-based management, as it is being pressed currently, is about the change you make. It doesn't matter what language you use. Is it demonstrating the change you're making? So this thing of their methodology, no. Let me go back to walking. I like this walking. If you want to check whether you're making a difference in your move towards Joburg, that's what we're interested in. Methodology is irrelevant. If it explains whether you're moving or not, that's what is key. You don't have to use the same vocab that I'm using, but all the vocabs or whatever we say, I think what AG is interested in, are you able to tell us whether you're moving or not? So I would challenge you to demonstrate what this different methodology. You give us an example. What is the different methodology AG makes? Because methodology is a very vague word, maybe the methodology they use. Well, that's another way of jumping out of accountability. So, general representation was very impressive, but I'm worried about that. That methodology thing. I'll start with the AG report quickly, because why chair of the board? I'm interested in this. I'm trying to follow the chair. A concern about stagnation. There are issues that you need to explain. Why are you stagnating in general? Because if you go to key controls, you are saying zero findings. If I have you. I'm not a technician, I'm not in my area of work. When are you assistants in your methodology? Here, under the section on key controls, FPB under governance, internal audit and audit committee is concerning. Maybe that doesn't mean material finding, you explain, you know better, but that concern is there. The question that we must ask, dealing with the context of stagnation, what is happening there? How is it contributing to your stagnation? It goes, if you go up there under leadership, what is confusing me is that downward arrow there, that red under FTP. I'm not sure whether it's pointing to oversight responsibility, whatever, because that thing is about regression, that arrow. Maybe you'll explain what is it referring to. You'll explain that. But I was thinking about that, which I get obviously, because on oversight responsibility, again, is a concerning. It's a color code concerning, if you look at FTP there. Again, if you go to your regular reporting, it's also, all I'm trying to do, CFO, is to interrogate the conditions that make you to stagnate. Maybe you can, while there's continuous concern there, what are the underlying issues? Even if you go to assurance providers there, senior management, you are in the area of concern. Accounting authority, you are in the area of concern. Executive, everyone else, internal audit again, audit committee, and so on. So if you can expose to us the underlying issues there, remember what I like with all the chaos that ICASA had. But there's one thing I liked, CFO. They explained all the material findings. It's as if the material findings that she found, and they tried to explain them. Although they did not answer the questions of if you gave contracts where there were no, where tax were not declared, what amount did it involve? They didn't do that. But they tried to explain all the material protocol findings. So we are asking you to explain that so that you understand what are the underlying causes of your stagnation. Again, if we further proceed, I mean, you must not be happy. That performance information, if you go to that in outcomes of programs that are selected, they selected four programs. In all those programs, there's material to call. Material finding, 87 regressed. Something is making you not to move forward. Now, I wanted to say, Chair, you seem to be looking forward very strongly, but getting nowhere. There's a desire, there's a demonstrable desire to move forward, but there is no movement forward. You keep on slipping backward. But I just want to leave that part and come now to your report that you just presented. In your report, under achievements, which is page 5, something that organizational achievement reported by the acting chief operation officer. Am I right? Yes. In that theater of the entity where everyone is acting. There's something wrong, Sefo. I'm engaging you, Sefo, in that first bullet. This Asia report is not an audit performance. It's a financial audit where you will comment. Because I think it is wrong to say FP received an unqualified audit in respect of performance audit. The two are not the same. If you check the agent's report is not speaking about how you have performed. It's speaking about your information, how you put the information in place. But it's not assessing your results of performance. All what they are doing, they are analyzing your language and everything, your record, not whether you have delivered services or not and so on. Because it does happen that you have delivered it, but you have not delivered services. That does happen. So I think it's wrong to call that performance audit. It's not a performance audit. Unless you are hiding a performance audit somewhere, then you can share that with us. But this is not a performance audit. Right? The AD has committed on the overall improvement in the organizational performance at the IPP. And then I was saying, if you go to page 14 of AG's report, if I'm still relevant on that, I'm saying, unless, Sefo, we are looking, of course, if you check what is killing you, whether it's an improvement, there's a regression. And then they cancel each other, and they keep you. So I'm curious to know where did the AG say general is overall improvement for record purposes, not what you say. If you can quote AG saying someone that's overall performance, so that we can go back to AG so that we can understand how this technician is viewed as overall article. Because of course in AFC, they're very good, but this thing they seem to cancel each other. Again, it's a performance issue. I think this one is hitting you. You know, implementation of things. Again, we go back to the thing, Gillian. Implementation of things is not an achievement. Implementation of things. Remember, we say, you don't report the change you wish, you report the change you make. There's a difference between the two. So when we say performance, report to us the change you make, not the change you wish. Two, I also sense that there's a confusion between goals objectives and outcome. Because the last time I remember, you can clarify and say for everybody to bring me. Last time I remember, an outcome is not what you make. An outcome is what come out of what you have made. If you grow the economy, because the economy has grown, poverty gets better. That is an outcome. Because of the conditions you've created. That's an outcome. As a result of what you make, something comes out of it. But the way we speak, we tend to confuse the state we want to create, which can be done directly by ourselves, and the outcome. Because you must understand, you can achieve it, but let's say it can lead to something else you did not intend. Although you tried your best, because other factors are in play. So I'm worried about the way we confuse the outcome and the state we commit to make, which are out of our input. Generally, the other thing that I didn't understand, CFO, maybe you tried, maybe I missed you. I enjoyed your presentation. I just want to say that again. I missed you in this cost saving thing. If you can help, I'm not criticizing anything. All I'm saying, I didn't understand it. Because my naive way of looking at things is that if you say 2016, oh no, I looked at it wrongly. No, I accept. Things are getting better in 2017. No, I was looking at it in a cocky way. Moving towards the right. That's fine. Okay. I think it's clear.
I see the whole page of consultants up to a 2 million plus. Just that I can't remember the last financial year, if we had this page, the last financial year, not this financial year. Is it something of each financial year, this page? CFO, CEO. I mean, there's a lot of money. Is there nothing we can do to avoid some of the items there? Because consultants, most is people who come and leave money paid to them. So last year we still have that page. Maybe just alert us as to is there a way where we can avoid maybe not necessarily all of them, but items of that page. Their way of dealing with some of them ourselves as people. An arithmetician.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I shan't waste time, but first say that one is quite happy. Looking at the report, there is a proper way forward. Just to be cleared, to be clarified on the seventh, this one to third page. We'll understand that all the points that you have raised are based on the mandate that you have been given. Now, if you kindly, that is one to the third point, okay, on that page, okay, point number three, indicate the route followed for such identification to ensure that fairness is there, and we don't have Sido apartheid mode. A follow-up, basically. I shall repeat. I'm referring to the third point where you talk about the identification of children that, or rather learners across the country, all right? Do you understand that? Okay? And then I'm saying that what one would want to hear from you is the indication of the route you follow for such identification of those pupils or learners, so that, as I said, have proper faith in the no pseudo apartheid kind of things that happened in the country. You've got that one, okay? Now, the last point on the same page, you have referred to UNISA courses. The honorable member here did raise that point, but let me take it forward to say through you, honorable chairperson, in 1998, you may remember, as the organized working class then, we went to the then, the late President Madiba and said, almost 40% of the people of our country are not working. And the workers then contributed their one day's wages. And as a sequel to that, we went to VETS. I'm talking about UNISA, or the universities. The workers went then to VETS, and we then said we have students here, a number of hundreds of students who had to be trained for purposes of job creation. And there was a proper negotiation that we went through so that the university itself, VETS, did not simply take as much money as it would perhaps wanted to then. Okay. So there was no intention to gain from the poor, but then to contribute as a sequel, of course, to the negotiations we then had. Now, what is the problem here with that UNISA? Do they simply want to gain? Do they want, profit out of this thing? I say this so that if that is a problem, is it not feasible for you then to go to another institution? Because in my understanding, it is not only that institution that can deal with that we want to achieve here. So have you been able to negotiate with them? Has it come to a deadlock? And I would say, if that is the case, unless you put it otherwise, it's not possible for us. Can we go and look and negotiate with another institution? There are very many in the country, and we can do that. And again, lastly, Chairperson, referring to the mandate, you see, you and I and very many of us here are Africans. I'm an African. Okay? Now, can you just clarify this thing about Inxeba, this film that is, going to be watched by the people of our country, because you are the persons who are supposed to look into the whole thing, all right? Why are you allowing that kind of thing? If you kindly could explain, I have been to where the young men, the African men, have been at the time when we had to grow. You are supposed to understand. And now you say that that has got to be taken and be washed by the people of our country. If you can just, not only our country, but even beyond our seas, if you can just clarify that so that we then can be able to move forward properly. It is very important for us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Do you have pressure of time? You have changed your flights, but still today, because you must leave. Otherwise, you'll incur more costs. I've gone back to the previous financial year in relation to the consultants, and I've seen that you had more or less the same, but what you spent is slightly less than what you're spending now in this financial year. Yeah, it's more this year. In dealing with the question of audit outcomes again, the audit report, generally, apart from the other the documents and all of that, as a basis for Auditor General to make findings, sometimes there is a leadership problem, leadership instability, and all of that. Because it goes back to the question I asked earlier, the stagnation and all of that. Maybe in explaining that question, you also need just to give us an idea of this question, if it's not one of the causes, and how you have dealt with it. Because the leadership instability has a negative effect for you or for any organization to have clean audit or unqualified with no findings or qualified or unqualified with findings. So those things, those issues have an impact in terms of those results. Chairperson? MPP Chair?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just highlight a few issues. Thank you for the questions raised and thank you for the affirmation. We'll definitely make the staff aware that there's been affirmation on the work they do. I would like to start with the bigger question of what the Auditor General seems to indicate and is concerned about. I think this morning something was said about regular meetings with the auditor, with the auditors and the Auditor General, internal audit. Maybe to give a picture, we have an internal audit function, and what we did was that we, in the past, it was wholly outsourced, and then we decided to have a hybrid model where we have a person internally who will continuously audit the way we work, but also backed up when needs arise with external audit. And so once I hear what the Auditor General says, we thought we were enhancing actually, this was the advice from the Auditor General that we must have a hybrid model because they wanted us to strengthen internal audit. But we've, since our meeting with the AG as the accounting authority, we have then asked our internal audit function person to work harder to escalate things to us as the accounting authority if the internal audit function feels stifled in their work or pointing out things that maybe they are not happening in the way in which the internal audit function says they are working. The audit committee works very well. They meet regularly, they look at the financial statements, they are qualified, there is chartered accountant, there is a person who has risks. It's also a mixture of external and internal. We have also asked again that they probably must look more on the side of risks so that we anticipate risks of issues that may emerge that we are not aware of. But I think what the chairperson raised on the leadership that may contribute to that is that this audit happened at a time when there was this instability. But we do not doubt the ability of the chief finance officer and the team that is there, because most of the work had been done when the previous CFO left and the previous executive left. There is no doubt to us that the audit of performance information may have had a bearing on this. So I'll ask him to still explain further on what could have happened. On leadership, we actually had a very serious discussion with the AG to explain what else the AG would like us to do to provide leadership. Because some of these issues only emerged a day before the sign-off of the financial. These concerns of the AG, there was never a concern about our financial, about anything in terms of the audit. And there are regular meetings. The representative of the Auditor General actually has regular interaction with our audit committee. And so that is why we were also surprised when the outcome was like this, that there is a concern. We did raise the issue that we are a bit disappointed that we only get to know as the accounting authority that there is a concern when we can do nothing about it at the late stage. But even there was a change of leadership of the team. So we were prepared to say maybe their style of work is different because we really couldn't understand what could have led to this reporting of this performance information in particular. The assurance is there. We've got internal audit function. Actually, all the committees on their agenda, they look at what did the AG did. Let's say last year, have all those matters been addressed? If it's HR, HR matters should go there for oversight. If it is IT, IT matters should be tracked in terms of this, and they are regularly reported. But I guess things do fall between the cracks. We don't want to play a blame game. Something may have fallen between the cracks. We just want to assure honorable members that we will probably work harder to make sure that such things don't happen. I'd like to then go to the INCEBA. We had a meeting actually with traditional leaders just last week on INCEBA. And unfortunately, in the constitutional dispensation that we have, we said exactly the same thing to them, that we understand, we appreciate, we actually know exactly how they feel. They made me watch INCEBA. I didn't want to watch. They said, you can't talk to traditional leaders without first watching it. So I watched INCEBA. And there are issues that I think I was telling them that there was a very good write-up on Sunday Independent about this, and whatever is written there is a fair representation of the analysis of the movie as it presents itself. There are lots of issues, but for us, all we do, we classify. We don't censor. We don't censor at all, and so it's outside of our mandate. But what we promise to do, we agreed that we will arrange a meeting between themselves, ourselves, and have a conversation about the concerns about making such movies and the impact it has, even up to a point where we said there must be an engagement by traditional leaders as we start with our new guidelines, whether they would like to have a classifiable element that deals with culture. So if there is culture, like for instance, there is a classifiable element on blasphemy, so whether there should be a classifiable element that relates to culture, if whatever is being done, then our classifier will then look at, alert the viewers to say, if you are sensitive on cultural matters, be careful, and then it will then say what rating it will be. Lastly, on a consultant, on my side, Chairperson, it's very difficult not to have consultants. We have tried to really limit. It's mainly issues of labor, because the organization has just one lawyer, and then there'll be an assistant. Most of the work, we get expertise in as and when we need expertise. We don't deal with everything internally. When we have to go to court, then we have to get in. So all that consultant also comes with those. Last year, we're also working with the bill in the past 2 years, and so we've had to get experts. And we really try to limit the use of consultants. And I think the reduction of international travel, we have tried. We didn't travel that much last year. But also, to be fair to members of council and staff, we can't grow if we don't get to know what other people are doing. And we can't raise the flag of our country if we don't. And we can't influence opinion in the region and in SADC if we don't get to know what people are doing elsewhere. So there will still be international travel, but we've tried to limit it within the possibilities of the finances we have, but also the treasury guidelines on delegation. Thank you. I'd like to hand over, maybe start with the CFO and then the CEO.
Thanks, honorable members. Maybe just to start on the smartness issue. The question was, why did we not have a smart way of reporting? The chair has tried to touch on it, and I believe even the COO will also touch on it. But the issue is around the indicator. The AG said that if we say, for example, a number of DVD that we are going to classify as an indicator, and then we go to the target and we talk about something else that is not a number, then there is a problem. So I think in some of the targets that we have challenges in terms of having an indicator that talks to the number, and on the actual performance target, we didn't talk about a number. And that's something that we have corrected. We have consulted AG and other stakeholders that are experts in the area to assist us so that we move forward. Because, I have to agree that there was an area of weakness that we had. But as an organization, we have done everything that we can in terms of revising all those indicators so that they can talk to the target. And we are hoping for the better results when AG comes and audit the SMART principle around the performance information that we have submitted. On the issue of car hire arrangement, yes, the 176,000 was paid by the CEO. It was settled by the CEO. On the issue on page 100 that talks to contingencies, this is not the amount that we actually paid in terms of settlement. This is the amount that we are required in terms of the standards of accounting to disclose if, in terms of legal opinion, there are probability that we might settle, then we need to disclose it. It's required by the standard. So based on the case that we had of an employee that was suspended, there was a probability that we might settle, but then we had to disclose it in our financial statement. So that's the 2.8 million that is on page 100 under contingencies. Okay, and then the issue of national and international travel, I think the chairperson touched a little bit on it. We reduced that from 5 million, and I have to be honest that there's no way that we can reduce that amount further, in a sense that part of the work that we do is outreach, and we are required to travel nationally to all the provinces across the country to advise consumers on the work that we do. So travel will always be part of the expenditure that we incur. And for as much as we have tightened the belt and tried to implement cost containment around that to ensure that if the employees had to travel, instead of allowing 6, then we cut it to 3. I think that's the approach that we are using, and it helped us in terms of cutting the cost. But we will always have that expenditure. But the good thing is that we managed to cut it, which I think is a move in the right direction. On the issue of salaries in terms of ratio against the revenue that we make or grant that we receive from DOC, we are spending 55% of the budget on salary-related cost, and in terms of the research, this is in line with the service delivery organization, because there's no way you can generate revenue if you don't employ people. So we are within, because the target is between 50 and 60%, and we're on 55. So we are within the right ratio there. On the issue of unqualified, the question was, where is the improvement there? I think when you actually look at the wording itself to say it's unqualified and stagnation for the past 4 years, yes, I have to agree with you that it doesn't show any improvement. But when you interrogate it further, or you go into detail, and you look at the number of findings, because for you to measure the improvement in terms of audit, you look at the number of findings and the materiality of those findings. So if you look at the findings that we used to have, we used to have findings on compliance. We used to have findings on financial statement because of material misstatement, financials being done wrong. We used to have about 40, 60 findings, a whole lot of Bibles of findings from each. And now, when you look at the number of findings that we are getting, in 15, 16, we had 14 findings. In the year under review, 16-17, that has just been audited, we had 8 findings. And out of those 8 findings, one is the finding that is critical or that is classified as material in terms of the audit. So it tells you that if you move from having 80 findings that are material to one finding that is material, we can't say that there's no improvement because we are just looking at the unqualified and stagnation thereof. So that's the reason why we are saying that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because we are moving in the right direction in a sense that we are tackling all those findings in terms of the controls that we have. So it means that from the controls that were dysfunctional, now they are starting to reap the rewards. And we can see that even though there is a lot of work that needs to be done, but there is...
Don't you want to pass on this one? Because I'm not convinced.
Okay.
You are not convincing me at all.
Okay.
Pass this one, because you see, our role is to play oversight. Then whether it's the entity or the department, cannot come and tell us over 4 years or 3 years, on stagnation. Whether there were hundreds findings, now there are 8. What are people employed doing in FPB? Because all what we need is results from people who are employed. We talk financial years here. So it's fine. It's not improvement. It's not. Members, I think it's correct that they must pass. Otherwise, we'll create problems.
Okay.
Proceed, Jim.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. On the issue of regression, the one that I said that we reduced from 0 to 1, I think there it was just a slippery of a tongue. On the question of why stagnation over 4 years, I think if ever I can try to justify that one again, it will just be, because I mean it's not gonna, you know, convince the members. Maybe let me just accept that we just need to work very hard and ensure that we get a clean audit going forward and not remain on stagnation. Yes, we will ensure that we do whatever that we can to move from stagnation for the 4 years, not only in terms of findings, but in terms of, you know, the cream that we actually want. In terms of the methodology that the AG used, I think I've already explained this one, that around the smartness of the issue. We have accepted on the issue. We invited the AG to look at the revised APP, then they advised, and then we resubmitted it to executive authority, and we are hoping that in 2017-18 financial year there will be improvement in terms of the outcome from AG. I think on the material findings that Honorable Kungubele said, I must explain and go into detail, is the only one issue that I was talking about around the smartness of the issue. that our indicators were not smart, therefore they couldn't measure them and they are unreliable. That's basically what they were raising, and it's something that we are working on. And then on the drivers of internal control, when you say leadership, it's containing and governance is containing. It goes back to the same issue of performance. The AG said that because of the performance, there is one issue that is material in nature. Therefore, they need to state in their table that the leadership and the governance is containing. And then in terms of calling the audit, performance audit, yes, I do agree on that one. It's audit, whether it's performance or financial, it's audit. I think we just separated, you know. Yes, it's audit, it's financial audit, yes. A reason why we specify, because we know that AG audit financial information, financial statement and then performance audit. But it's audit, I agree. Yes, it's audit. Okay, I'll hand over to the CEO and the COO.
Switch off the other one. I hope we'll still come back to the consultants. Because why I say we must come back to the consultants, it must be explained. I'll tell you why. I'm going back to this thing. The second item there says pastel and casework consulting, 159,000. FPB legal fine. Maybe there are issues. A bill amendment. You operate under the OC, and I think there are so many. There is a lot of assistance that you can get. Instead of maybe you'll have to explain this so that we understand that why are you not using legal services or whatever legal services of the department. On the pastel and casework consulting, I'm not sure what you're talking about there. Explain that so that I can pose the question, because I understand, I have a slight understanding of it, and I want to raise the question when I'm clear of my understanding on that. So please, if you can, why are the legal costs in terms of amendment bills? What is case a pastel and case where consulting? And then I can pose a question. If you can start with the pastel and case where consulting, what does it entail? What is it for?
Thanks, Chair. On the pastel and caseway, on pastel, what used to happen is that we used to capture the amounts manually on the report that we submit to the council. So what we did was to get a consultant that will build in a business intelligence system that will look at the ledger and draw out the report that we will go and present to the council, the income statement, the cash flow, and the balance sheet. And on caseware is the system that we use to draft the financial statements. So we had two people that assist on caseware, so they had to go and get the training on the caseware, and we also had to increase the licenses on other two people that assist on drafting the financial statement.
I think that's where my problem is. This past term and case where even the last financial there is a cost on this one. Consultants employed. And generally, if you utilize consultants who are not empowering people who will do that work and continue engaging consultants, for me it's a problem. Especially when it's not once off. It's done in 15-16, it's done in 16-17. Why continue with that kind of arrangement when you have people educated in FPP who can be trained and be utilized internally or within FPP? Why continue financial year by financial year?
Thanks, Chair. We had the two-year agreement with the pastel consultant, and they were assisting us, as I've already indicated, that they started in 15-16 financial year. So in this year, it was the final year that they were finalizing, developing the report. It's not only when we talk about BIC report, we talk about not only one report that we generate. We talk about the report that talks to the supplier. It talks about the report that actually tell us in terms of paying the supplier, when are we paying, who are we paying more, and then how are we rotating, and all those kind of arrangements. And also in terms of the advanced pastel module that we were using, because it's not only on finance, it's on finance and SCM. So on SCM, we actually automated our system to say that we don't do manual requisition and quotation. You do everything on the system, which is, it's actually automated. So it was sort of like a project to make sure that we automate our system instead of doing things manually, because it was taking time and we didn't have enough capacity. So we thought that if we can automate everything, it will be better going forward. Not that we don't have people that are skilled. We do have people that are skilled, because if we look at the financial statement, we didn't get any assistance from consultants. We drafted it within the entity.
So you decided to engage their services for 2 years. Why not 1 year? The issue here is to transfer skills to the people that you have.
I think the second year was more on the maintenance and support. And now that we are more empowered, we're no longer going to need them. Because we felt that if we can limit it to 1 year, we might shortchange ourselves for where they go, and then the next thing, we are not fully empowered in terms of utilizing the system.
So skills are transferred?
Yes. Hence, I'm saying that in terms of drafting the financial statement, we did it in-house. We didn't need any assistance from the consultant.
Honorable Kumba.
No, as a matter of principle, I want us to go on record. I find it an intellectual arrogance from the CFO to say an audit is an audit. In terms of finances, audits are classified. It's a professional thing. You don't call any audit any audit. I want you to correct everything, because this is not a performance audit. You can't just say it's an audit, never is an audit.
No, I was actually saying that I agree with what you said, that we can't just call it performance audit. I agree that we're going to correct it. I didn't say it's just an audit. I said I agree with what you were saying. That's why I was actually laughing. Okay.
Can you go to the amendment?
On the amendment, Chair.
That's related. Again, this one related to the consultant.
Yes. I'm taking this one because the team that was working on this is no longer there. At the time, we drafted.
Consult on MPB Chair.
We have not finished. On the bill at the time, the first thing we needed to do, we had consultations because we did the initial draft internally. We had consultations and all the amendments on behalf of the department, because of the content that we had to put before the department. And then what came back was a huge backlash from the industry. And clearly we realized that we need to make sure that whatever we put in there does not find itself contested to a point where the bill loses its the gist of what we're trying to do. So we needed external people, lawyers. So we called for called for proposals, and a particular company came to accompany us in this process of tightening up those areas where there is likely to be a big legal challenge on the amendment, especially on the online space, because that's where the biggest problem, the online space, which is a new space, a new industry, and big money, and we being a small entity with one legal person who is not an expert on technology and cyber industry. So we had to get people who have expertise in the cyber industry, but who also have lawyers who can tap within their company any information that they need. So that's why we are unlikely to have that in the coming year, because we finished with the bill.
Can you also explain the FNB, FPB? MPB Council Legal Consultation. Council is yourself.
Yes, it is ourselves. It is going to come in the report. When the whistleblower matter came, we thought we'd handle it internally. And it became very complicated for us. So we needed an objective. We literally wanted an objective outside a company to assist us at two levels. It was both legal, but also, I don't want to use the word audit, but the verification of some of the information that had come before us, so that we can be sure that what we are doing is legally sound. It will stand the scrutiny of any challenge that we have. So we got two companies to assist us. That's why we have it. It will not come, hopefully, again. It is really related to, because we had four executives. It was not just one. It was four executives who were on us. Thank you, Chair.
Can I pass on this one? The consultants not done. You can attend to other questions.
Okay, Chair, I won't respond to the direct question that you have asked me. I think the acting CFO has tried to respond on the unqualified audit, and we accept it's not an improvement, but what I was trying to articulate was the reduction in the number of findings, but we'll close the matter, Chair. On the Honourable Dreshen's questions, the survey, I'm happy that the Deaf Federation actually was sampled in the survey. We do anonymous sampling, but we just give the demographic and the profile of the type of people that we would like sampled in the research. So I'm happy that they were reached, and the recommendations are there in the Convergent Survey report, which I reported. That means their inputs are part of those 9,000 South Africans that we surveyed in the financial year. And the findings from that are going into the classification guidelines review process, which we are currently working on. But some of the issues we will take on as advocacy and lobbying issues within the film industry. In terms of the limitations in our work and our legislation, there's very little that we can do about what comes to us. But we can acknowledge that we interact a lot with filmmakers, content creators, content producers, so we can raise the issues of the community with them. Educators, we reach all, we go to all schools that we identify, but I would admit maybe we have not focused a lot on the deaf community in terms of our outreach and awareness campaigns, and we will definitely look at that. We do have a life orientation teacher's manual that we leave in the schools. So we leave that with the schools so that they can integrate that into their life orientation curriculum, because one of the things that we found lacking in the curriculum is that it focuses on cybersecurity and responsible media consumption at a very superficial level with the learners. So we're trying to get into detail, so we leave that with the learners. The issues that you've raised on social media violence and the breach of confidentiality of young people, of children in particular, is something of concern for us as well. In terms of our legislation, the one thing that is very clear that no one can ever transcend is in terms of the sexual representation of children. But when it comes to the other things, and some of the things that have ethical considerations as well, the legislation is not very clear. But how we are trying to deal with those issues is through education. For instance, I can assure you that many people, even amongst ourselves, there's a fellow on social media they call Ndlovu, a young fellow from the Eastern Cape in PE. Everyone shares these videos and everyone laughs. But I always ask myself, in terms of the exploitation of that child, because he is a minor and he is not at a point where he can give consent to certain things, is it appropriate for us to be putting him out on social media like that and sharing the images? But that is something that we can only curb through education rather than legislation. So that's something that we focus on as the Film and Publication Board. In terms of your question, Honorable Machoba, in terms of how many provinces we've gone to, in the last financial year, we went to all provinces, all 9 provinces. We can provide a breakdown in terms of the numbers and where we went to. In the last month, we presented to the NCOP a detailed report on our outreach and awareness campaigns, so we can share that with you as well. Who are the beneficiaries of the UNISA course? It's every South African who has an interest in the media space. But us as FPB, we will benefit directly because in the next 4 years, 5 years, to recruit classifiers, we will move towards having someone who has an accredited qualification for that. The labor court case, I did refer to it in the report. I'm coming, Honorable Matisha. The labor court case, I just referred to it, it's still pending. The former employees are still pursuing the matter further. It was a case where the employees accessed a restricted area in the organization and they stole DVDs and took them out of the office. Now, in terms of our disciplinary code, that is a dismissible offense, so they were dismissed. Honorable Gumbele is not here, so he's already been answered. Mr. Madisha, Honorable Madisha, how do we select the learners? We go to every part of the country where we see there's a problem. So if we see that there is a case of child pornography in the area, for instance, if we get reports that the police have picked up child pornography in this area, we make sure that we go and do outreach and awareness activations in that area. We go anywhere and everywhere where we are invited by ordinary members of the public. So we actually, most of the numbers that we reach through invitations that we get from our stakeholders. The Web Rangers project is a controlled project. That one, it's slightly different from our ordinary outreach and awareness project. Because we are piloting a peer-to-peer education program with other partners, we have decided to contain it in Gauteng for now, and then once we have assessed its effectiveness, we will roll it throughout the country. And then UNISA, what does UNISA want to gain? I think we must just emphasize that it was a partnership where we all put funds and resources into the course. So it's not just FPB, but UNISA is also providing lecturers and facilities. So they have actually been very assisting in this program. So that is the issue. And the issue of Mungab, I think the chairperson has responded on that. Thank you.
If we are catching a 7 o'clock flight, at this time we must be sure of an hour and a half on the road. But I think they have responded to questions on all of Takhan.
Apologies, Chair. Just a follow-up. If DESA requests a meeting again, I would request you please to grant that meeting so that they can highlight their concerns in person. The last SMS that came in is that many in the deaf community don't understand the seriousness of pornography and displaying that on social media. So if you can work with DESA in that respect to get that information to the deaf community too. So if they request a meeting, I'd request you to please grant them the meeting. Thank you.
Chair Modern, I want to say to FPV, thank you very much to visited New Cross Road last year with a very successful event, but you promised to come back. The youth in that area reminded me every day to say, where is FPV again? Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to say that word to them. I have two constituencies, Chair. So you must know that it is not for Google too. It's that area that's surrounded by the high crime.
I don't know your constituency. We have constituencies too.
I want to emphasize one thing. I know there is no time now. But then to basically say to them that point number 3, you talk about the your accessing the learners, okay? But then from what you have just said, it's around Johannesburg only. I think that is what you have said, where you've been able to go. And I wish to say that we have the young in Emadadin, in Kwakwa, Butabelo, Butokwa, everywhere around the country. And it will be proper for you to go around and make sure that our children get access. But then, permit me to say, let's take it further, and not waste your time, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, let us take it further to get proper explanation in the next meeting. But the children of South Africa more than 57% of our country have got to be embraced. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Maybe Honorable Mandisha didn't hear me properly. I said we go to all parts of the country. Personally, I've been to Guatuguza, I've been to Bushbuck Ridge, I've been to Limpopo, I've been to the Northern Cape. So that 24,000 is certainly not counting alone. What we can do is we can provide a detailed report of exactly where we have been, that where those 24,000 learners were reached.
Okay, I think you noted the report that Honorable Van Dijk requested you to submit. We can just give you a few days to give us those reports. The report about the CEO process, the deadline is Monday morning, because you have the report. We assume that those reports are ready. Because the reason why Monday, you have a tomorrow, we have a meeting on Tuesday. We have a meeting on Tuesday morning, we want both reports to be tabled in that meeting for a process. So I don't think FPB is not ready for that report. That was some time ago. So we'll expect that report by Monday morning, so that when we meet on Tuesday at 10 o'clock, at least we have gone through the report. Members, questions were responded to. I think it was a very good interrogation. The report was good. The report itself was good, but we want every department, every entity to do the right thing. We may appear very harsh, very hard on you, but I think some of the things that we say are of a lot of help to you as people who are supposed to write the reports. The question of packaging information in the report that Honorable Kungubela raised is quite important. I think that's why CEO had to rearrange the information so that it flows. So it's not the first time that we raised this thing. It's not the first time that Honorable Kungubela championed this thing. I like the work that he's done. He's always making an example of. But it's only that the work that he's talking about is to show back. That work, it must change. There is also a place called Chapo. It must go to Chapo, that road. But thank you very much, members. And you go well, FPB. We are meeting on Tuesday at 10, members, 10 o'clock. Honorable Mashoba you must know that we are meeting at 10. But you will also listen to Honorable Kalago as to what happens before 10. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, FPB. Thank you very much, thank you very much. We always want you in this meeting. Yeah, it's your responsibility. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
there's no reporter here.